This is ESPN Radio.
Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline. And right now, we got to go out to the Goodyear Hotline to bring on ESPN college football analyst David Pollack. And David, this is a big weekend in the Big Ten, a big weekend around college football. And we've got to start with that matchup between Ohio State and Penn State. And I got to ask you, your prospects on Ohio State, their ability to win this game on Saturday, and their ability to run the table for the remainder of their slate?
I think there's a good chance both of those happen. When you look at Ohio State, their offense obviously, you know, even against Oregon played really well, but their defense kind of held them back, you know, extremely predictable, gave away what they did a lot and didn't execute really well and missed a bunch of assignments. And I think they've cleaned that up, but they also, I mean, to be honest, they've kind of played some boo-boo. So I'm excited to see them against an athletic offense with Penn State. They got Dotson. I don't think Clifford's completely healthy, but they got Dotson. They got Parker Washington. They got some dudes on the perimeter that can make them pay. So I'm interested to see if their defense is much improved, if it has a lot to do with who they've played, or if it's that they're really, really, truly improved. So Ohio State, speed kills. They got plenty of it on offense. They can run the football. They got a back in Travion Henderson that is an absolute freak show. I mean, I don't know if anybody's been watching him, but he's going to be an all-time great back when he leaves Ohio State. He's that kind of good. So defensively, we're going to figure out about him against Penn State this weekend.
Another matchup that might end up having playoff implications. Let's talk Michigan, Michigan State. Obviously, this matchup has a little bit of everything in state rivals, conference rivals, a 6 versus 8, 2 top 10ers. What's the biggest key to this matchup?
You know, I think that we always talk about the line of scrimmage. And I think Michigan is a team that lives really well in this realm. Their offensive line is big and physical. They run the football. Their defensive line is big, physical, but they can rush the passer. So they can dominate football games. And nobody's really been able to have any success really stopping the run and making them throw consistently, or beating their defensive line and making plays in the secondary. So Michigan State, they've got a bunch of playmakers. Kenneth Walker, he's a stud. He's a stud running back, number 9. He's a transfer from Wake Forest. He can make you miss in short spaces. He's built really low to the ground. He's quick. He rattles off 70-yard runs and makes big plays. And then you got Reed out wide, who's made big plays in the passing game and then created explosive plays. It's just exceptional balance from Michigan State. They rush it for over 250 a game. They throw it for over 200 a game. And there's only 6 teams in the country that can say that. So that balance versus, you know, Michigan and that great pass rush is going to be really important.
David, big picture with Michigan. Jim Harbaugh's received his fair share of criticism of the job that he's done out there in Ann Arbor, but it feels like this team, this program, might be turning a corner with this season. What do you make of Jim Harbaugh and the Michigan Wolverines from this season, and is this going to be a potential springboard for them and their program moving forward?
Well, I think the thing Harbaugh did, remember, they've got like 6 or 7 new coaches there, and he's completely changed. You know, no Don Brown. Dave McDonald comes in as DC, who's in his 30s, and a lot of guys that are young. Mike Hart's there now. Like, a lot of guys that are young for recruiting purposes, for relational purposes, practice purposes. And so he's really changed a lot of his philosophy. And look, you watch on Sunday, on Saturdays, let's not get it twisted. They're still going to hit you in the mouth, right, mm-hmm. between the eyeballs over and over. But I think he's done a good job of bringing in new guys to help him out. So, listen, the perception is the perception, but they got to win big games. He struggled against Michigan State. He hasn't beaten Ohio State. That's a big judging stick for those guys, a big measuring stick that they'll do at the end of the season. But you got to be if you're a Michigan fan, you got to be happy. Listen, we're winning close games. We're playing great defense. We're playing physical. You know, is the passing game evolved enough, which we want to see it evolve to? No. But at least you're winning and instead of taking lumps along the way, taking L's.
ESPN college football analyst David Pollack joining Chris Canty and Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. So, David, we've obviously been talking about some of these big Big Ten matchups coming up this weekend. How many Big Ten teams do you think realistically could make the playoffs?
I mean, from what I've seen so far, you know, I'll say Ohio State is the most realistic just because I know they can score and they have so much balance on offense. You know, I just the explosiveness is not there for Michigan on offense yet. They got to play ugly and win close. And are they going to beat Penn State, Michigan State, and Ohio State? I don't think they'll go through unscathed. Michigan State, I don't know if they're good enough on the offensive line to consistently plow and keep balance. So, I mean, I'm still thinking Ohio State is the best chance for the Big Ten for the playoffs. And I'm saying that, and they got one loss, and the other teams don't. So it kind of gives you an idea that I think Ohio State's speed and skill and what they got going is a little bit different than what Michigan State and Michigan have.
David, we got Cincy sitting at number two in the polls. Is this the year where we finally see a Group of Five team get into the college football playoff?
Man, this is our best chance. And I say that, think about the teams that have lost already. And I think we're going to find out a lot. You know, the Tuesday ranking shows, usually we're like, yeah, that sucks. We don't even care about the ranking show. But where do they have Cincinnati right now? Because they have it. They have a big Notre Dame win. That's the biggest, you know, win, obviously playing at their place. That was a top 10 team. Notre Dame's continuing to win, you know, handling Indiana. Indiana's not very good this year, but you know, they'll have SMU down the stretch. You know, they could play SMU again or Houston to get maybe two ranked teams on their schedule. But where they're ranked right now is going to be a big indicator. If they're behind Ohio State already and behind some teams and not sitting in the top four, it might be bad news for Cincinnati, right? But this year, in the year of upsets, in the year of Alabama's already lost, Ohio State's already lost, Clemson's got two or three losses now. Like, if it's not this year, what the heck? We might as well not even include them in the playoffs.
David, I'm sure you saw that Mike Tomlin was asked about his potential interest in the USC opening. He could not have been quicker to shut it down. He said, never say never, but never. Were you surprised that he shut the rumors down that quickly? And how attractive is that job?
I'm not surprised because Mike Tomlin is that dude, man. I mean, there's a few coaches, obviously, there's a few coaches in the college level too, but the pro level, when Mike Tomlin speaks, I listen. When Brandon Staley speaks now for the Chargers, I listen. Just a couple of guys I have a tremendous amount of respect for, but man, he just, what are you talking about? Like, get the heck out of here with that crap. You're going to tell me I got to go deal with schoolwork and recruiting and all that, you're out your mind. Like, I got one of the best jobs in the world. So you could definitely tell he felt insulted. But USC throwing a lot of names out there. They're not in any hurry. They don't need to be in any hurry. I think the transfer portal has kind of changed that too. You don't have to necessarily worry about signing date in December when you can recruit kids and get transfers to help you immediately. But I think they'll get, in the end, a great coach. Whether it's Luke Fickell, whether it's Matt Campbell, whether it's James Franklin, I think they're going to get one of those three names. And if they get any one of those three names, I think you're getting a proven coach that has won at different spots that now has to go to USC. Listen, USC has its challenges. I mean, let's be honest. It's not a top job anymore in the country. I don't see it like that. They don't spend money on facilities. They don't spend money on assistant coaches like they should. They're not. The USC brain has lost a lot of its luster. The Pac-12 has lost a lot of luster. So I think it's definitely in need of a guy that's ready to come in and make some changes.
David, we appreciate you jumping on with us, sharing your insights, man. Enjoy this weekend's games.
No problem. Y'all have a good one.
That's ESPN college football analyst David Pollack. Coming up now, this weekend's preview is brought to you by GEICO. Happy GEICO-ween. Switch to GEICO and see if saving money is in your future. Coming up next, who's going to have the biggest impact in the NFL this weekend? We'll tell you. This is Canty and Golic Jr., Amber Wilson, filling in on ESPN Radio and ESPN+.
This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. And Amber, we're going to do a little bit of a whip around right here, and we're going to play a game on who's going to have the biggest impact on their team's game this upcoming week, week 8 of the NFL season. So I got to toss it over to Devin, my dude, to get us started with this segment.
All right, Chris, let's stick with you. We got the Browns and the Steelers, AFC North matchup. Who's going to have a bigger impact, Baker Mayfield or Big Ben Roethlisberger?
I'm going to say Big Ben, and here's the reason why. I mean, Baker Mayfield is important for his team, but since the Cleveland Browns want to run that offense through the offensive line and Nick Chubb in that running game. They're second in most attempts of rushing the football this year, so it's not necessarily going to be on Baker to win the game for his team. Conversely, with Big Ben Roethlisberger, I mean, their team is 30th in rushing attempts, so this is all on Big Ben to try to make that offense go. And I haven't necessarily seen the consistency that I would like, especially going up against this Cleveland defense. So I would give the edge to Big Ben in terms of needing to have the biggest impact, but I feel like that can cut both ways. It's not necessarily a positive when I say it like that.
Yeah, needing to have the biggest impact because of the way that these teams play, but not because Big Ben is necessarily going to be any more effective overall than Baker Mayfield. You just hope that he will be if you're a Steelers fan, because you need him to be. He's 11-2-1 in his career in Cleveland. He's an Ohio guy. He's always had a chip on his shoulder towards that organization. He took a shot at them this week. He said, "I'm just glad I'm not the their most winning quarterback in their stadium anymore." Obviously, hearkening there on the struggles of the Browns in the majority of his career. But I think that that really has everything to do with that 11-2-1 record. Like, that says more about how bad the Browns have been before recent memory, more than necessarily the dominance of the Steelers. Big Ben certainly is tapering off here towards the tail end of his career, but it is the running game, like Chris said, where that is really going to be the key for the Browns. And Seattle ran for 144 yards a couple weeks ago on the Steelers. They're probably going to run all over Pittsburgh. It's going to be more about the running game and a lot less about a Baker Mayfield coming off of an injury.
All right, we have the Lions and the Eagles, and these two head coaches, they're not coaching very good teams, but they give us fantastic sound bites. Amber, who's going to have a bigger impact, Dan Campbell or Nick Sirianni?
Ooh, Sirianni, he had the flower speech this week. Did you all hear the flower speech? Everybody was conning on him for the flower speech. I kind of liked it. He put up a picture of the flower, and then he went on this whole explanation about how there's roots in the flower, and everybody wants to see the flower, but you can't see what's happening under the soil, and how that is representative of the team here. I would say the question is, though, like, what is the foundation that he's laying there? Because it has been really confusing to watch, and there is a lot of sloppiness on that team. But don't worry, there's also a lot of sloppiness from the Lions as well. So when we're talking about more impact from one of these coaches, I guess I'll go with Dan Campbell. I think they are going to get over the hump here at some point. They had an opportunity to pull it out last week against a very good Rams team, so maybe they'll get that opportunity and they'll actually be able to do it here going into a bye. I'll go Dan Campbell, but honestly, this one's a toss-up.
Yeah, so we got the kneecap biter versus the gardener. And in this instance, I'm going to go with Dan Campbell, not only because he's my former teammate, but because he's the coach out of the two that called the surprise onside kick last week, and it actually worked to the benefit of his team, unlike Nick Sirianni, who gifted the Raiders a possession at the beginning of the second half and ended up pushing it up to a 24-7 lead. So when it comes to which coach is going to put his team in the best position to be competitive and win a game, I have a lot more confidence in Dan Campbell than I do Nick Sirianni, even though the Eagles have two more wins than the Detroit Lions. I just feel like the Detroit Lions are a much more competitive team at this point in the season, and the Eagles, 5 turnovers in the last 3 games, not going in the direction that you want it to be going.
I wonder if some of that's expectations too, though. Like, we're more let down by the Eagles, even though they do have multiple wins there, than we are by the Lions, but nevertheless.
All right, next up, we got the Titans taking on the Colts in a game that might just be defined by the running backs. Two great ones, Derrick Henry, Jonathan Taylor. Chris, who's going to have a bigger impact?
I am going to roll with Derrick Henry. I mean, as great as Jonathan Taylor has been, not only in the run game, but as a receiver, I mean, how can you doubt King Henry? I mean, you see him do it all. I mean, last week he throws a touchdown pass against the Kansas City Chiefs defense. Not that that's exactly hard, because everybody throws touchdown passes against the Kansas City Chiefs defense. But you know what I mean. Derrick Henry is one of those guys that's an unstoppable force. Even when you got loaded boxes, the guy finds a way to be able to get production in the running game. And then he opens everything up for everybody else on the edges of that offense. A.J. Brown, Julio Jones. And you saw Ryan Tannehill and company be able to take advantage of that in the last couple of ball games. So I'm going to say Derrick Henry has the bigger impact between him and Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah, I don't want to take anything away from Jonathan Taylor here. He's incredible as well. But really, this whole game is going to come down to whether that Colts D can contain Derrick Henry. And the answer to that for the majority of the season has been absolutely not for all of these other defenses that he's faced. He's topped at least 100 yards in 4 straight games here against the Colts. Like, this is not a good matchup against Derrick Henry. And when I pull all the rushing categories that matter, rushing attempts, rushing yards, rushing touchdowns, rushing yards after contact, contact, first downs, explosives, like every category that you can pull if you're a stats head, which I'm not one. But just comparing Derrick Henry and Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry tops Jonathan Taylor in every single one of those categories except for rushing yards per attempt. That's it. With 60 carries, minimum 60 carries. Like, that's the only category where Jonathan Taylor is above Derrick Henry. He's on all of these categories. He's a top five in every single category. It's just unfortunate we're comparing him to, you know, the best in all of these categories in Derrick Henry.
All right, Amber, let's stick with you. We got Justin Herbert taking on the Patriots. Who's going to have a bigger impact, Justin Herbert or the Patriots defense?
Justin Herbert. That's, I think, the easy answer here, because the Patriots, the Patriots defense is 15th in pass defense. They're 11th. In run defense. You know, it's not a bad defense. We did see them do some things to confuse Zach Wilson, and obviously Justin Herbert's not a rookie, but he's a young quarterback, and can they throw some things at him and throw some schemes there at the line of scrimmage and change ups where Justin Herbert's going to get off kilter? And we know what they did to him, where New England took advantage of him last season in a total whooping. But I think that it's unrealistic to assume that this season he's going to, or that they're going to be able to hold Herbert to less than 4 yards per pass attempt and no touchdowns like they did last season. This feels like a bad matchup in terms. Well, listen, I don't know if it's a bad matchup, but I'm really hoping Justin Herbert here is able to come out and show up, because obviously we were talking about him being an MVP candidate this season. That's faltered here in recent weeks. I am going to give the edge here to Justin Herbert.
Yeah, Amber, you can go ahead and say it. And I know you don't want to, because you want to give some respect to Bill Belichick. But this is a bad matchup for the Patriots defense. Let's just call it what
it
is.
You said it.
I mean, listen, I'm not going to be fooled by what I saw the Patriots defense do to Zach Wilson and Mike White. It is the New York Jets. I remember 2 weeks ago what that Patriots defense allowed from the Dallas Cowboys, 445 passing yards from Dak Prescott. That was the most that a Bill Belichick defense had ever given up, including 3 touchdowns, including the game winner to CeeDee Lamb in overtime. So, yeah, I think this is a bad matchup. The Chargers have every bit as good as weapons on the outside when it comes to the receiving core as the Dallas Cowboys do. And Justin Herbert is one of the most talented throwers of the football that we have in the National Football League. So I feel like the Chargers are poised to be able to take advantage of some mismatches that they're going to have in that Patriots secondary. So I'm going to say Justin Herbert has more of an impact than that Patriots defense. And that was NFL Impact. Tune into the NFL football action Sunday as the Bears host the 49ers. Coverage begins noon Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up next, tonight's Game 3, a must-win for the Braves. We'll ask Dan Shulman when he joins us next. This is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. All guests join us via the Goodyear Hotline, and we're going to go out to the Goodyear Hotline right now and bring on ESPN Baseball Radio play-by-play guy Dan Shulman. Dan, I got to ask you, with this radio call, call that you got in Game 3, it's got an exciting game, but we've got a little bit of a weather element in Atlanta. How do you see that affecting what's going to happen in Game 3?
Yeah, Mother Nature is in the house, and she is going to be with us for the next couple of days, it sounds like. So good to be with you guys. As I look down from our broadcast booth right now, the tarp is on the field. Nobody took BP. Nobody was on the field, which means the Astros, they never got on this field. They couldn't even get on last night. They didn't take ground balls here. They haven't taken fly balls here. You know, every ballpark is different, right? And the Astros have literally never set foot on this field. So that's something to be aware of. But, you know, listen, it's cold and it's supposed to rain off and on. They tell us they think it's going to start on time and we'll be able to play through. It just might not be the nicest conditions in the world, so we'll see if there are some adventures for some of the players defensively tonight.
So familiarity and the elements aside, the Astros did even things up by doing what they do so well, and of course that's hitting the baseball. So did they unlock something that they can bring into tonight?
You know, it's I think they can get rolling, and I'm kind of on the fence about that momentum thing. You know, can you get rolling and keep rolling, or is momentum only as good as your next game starting pitcher, that sort of thing? But I think they actually had a tiny little bit of good luck in game two. You know, in the second inning, they hit three or four balls that weren't hit very hard. One went through the open right side because the shift was on. One was an infield hit by Jose Siri, a very fast player. But the Astros kind of put themselves in position to generate a little bit of good luck because they strike out less frequently than any other team in baseball. So the more you put it in play, the more that good things can happen. I think and have thought all year this is the best offensive team in baseball. And even though they're in the National League Park tonight without the DH, they've still got all their big bats in there. Alvarez is going to play left instead of DHing. Brantley's going to move from left to right. Tucker's going to move from right to center. So they've still got that loaded lineup right now. And they'll be facing a guy in Ian Anderson, very young, but a lot of playoff experience. And he's been good in the postseason for Atlanta. I still believe in the Astros lineup. I believe in the quality of their at-bats. I believe in the depth of their lineup. I would expect them to be able to score runs at a pretty good clip the rest of the way. The question is, do they get enough pitching to hold Atlanta down?
And, Dan, you brought it up. I mean, Ian Anderson, this should be a favorable starting pitching matchup going up against Luis Garcia for the Houston Astros. But how much more important is this start from Anderson given Charlie Morton's status, knowing that he's going to be out the rest of the series?
Very, very much so, because Brian Snitker will – if you say to Brian Snitker, and we did about an hour and a half ago – who's going to start game four? Who would you like to use in game four? He said, we got to get through game three first. Like, that's where they're at right now. And it's the same situation for game five. Originally, it was just going to be a bullpen game in game four and Charlie Morton in game five. Now, it's all hands on deck in four and five. So, Ian Anderson, not only do they need him to be good, they need him to stay out there a while. And his two starts in the championship series against the Dodgers, he went only 4 3 innings. He went six against Milwaukee in the division series, and that's what they really need. They need five, maybe six, out of Ian Anderson. But, you know, right now both teams, guys, are at the point where you figure you do anything you can to win a game today. You figure it out. Whatever you have to do, you try to win the game, and then you have a meeting after the game and figure out what things look like for tomorrow.
Yeah, the loss of Morton has an incredible ripple effect. And all we heard, Dan, coming into this series was that the Braves' rotation is its strength. So my question to you is the Braves' rotation still its strength? And if not, what is?
I think at this point the bullpen's got to be the strength. You know, they've got all these left-handers down in the pen, A.J. Minter and Tyler Matzek and Will Smith, who have all pitched well, and a righty in Luke Jackson, who had a nice bounce-back effort in Game 1 of this series. And Brian Snitker really relies upon and trusts those four guys, and they can all go more than an inning, which is something you can't say about a lot of relievers or every team's bullpen right now. But their guys, you know, the four of them can piece together six innings if need be. I think that's their strength. And I'm wondering, when it's all said and done in this series, if Atlanta wins, if we will be talking about their strength was even guys deeper down on their staff. Kyle Wright, who they brought up from the minors and put on the roster this round, barely pitched in the majors this year, but was great at AAA as a starter. So he can go out there and give them multiple innings either tomorrow or Sunday. Tucker Davidson, the guy who took the place of Charlie Morton on the roster, is he going to have to get them important outs? If Atlanta wins this, I think their strength might be that they're going to get some kind of unsung hero performances from some guys down towards the bottom of their staff.
Dan, I want to ask you a question on the flip side. If the Houston Astros are able to win this series, and I know we're a long ways to determining the outcome of the World Series, but if the Houston Astros were to be able to pull off the win, does this allow guys like Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa and Alex Bregman to turn the page on the sign-stealing scandal that they were marred with a couple of years ago?
I think it's an interesting question. I think in their minds it does. I think in the minds of a lot of fans, though, nothing will ever change it. Some people may say, yeah, well, they're great players. And you know, I've always thought of it this way. Yes, a number of them cheated, but they're also great players. You know, you can be both. You can be a great player who also cheated. And I think we have seen enough evidence over the last couple of years that Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve and Alex Bregman and Yuli Gurriel, who are the four remaining hitters from those years, that they're all really good players. And obviously, I'm not absolving them of what they did at all. But they are really good hitters, and they have shown that over over a number of years. Even since they stopped doing what they're doing, assuming they stopped doing what they're doing, which I think we all believe that they have, given all the rules and the checks and balances in place. I think different guys look at it differently. I think some of them have really struggled with the booing and the way that they are portrayed publicly. I'm not sure Carlos Correa cares. I really don't think he cares. It's almost like he kind of relishes the attention, and he can use it to motivate him and an us against the world and a chip on their shoulder and all that sort of thing. I think it bothers Altuve more than it bothers Correa. But if they win, I think in their minds will be, a little bit of, see, we showed you. But they're never going to be able to walk away from it. It's going to be on their Wikipedia page forever, right? Like, once that gets on there, you can't take it off. But I think they're kind of living in the moment a little bit more. And maybe at another time they'll think of it in those terms. But I think right now they're just trying to, get a hit in the next at-bat, try to win a ball game, and see where they stand when this is all said and done.
Well, Dan, we appreciate a few minutes of your time. Enjoy the game tonight, and we'll be tuned into the call.
All right. Thanks, guys.
That is ESPN Radio play-by-play for baseball, Dan Shulman. Dan is on the call for Game 3 of the World Series on ESPN Radio, with the pregame starting right after we're done at 7 p.m. The World Series is on ESPN Radio, presented by AutoZone. Catch all the action tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio and the ESPN app. Coming up next, we'll get you set for the weekend when we go through 3 and out, and after, we'll tell you something that you can win right now with this right here. We're going to hook up one of our lucky listeners with $3,000 during tonight's baseball championship game. To enter to win, here's what you need to do. Listen to tonight's game on ESPN Radio, and in the seventh inning, Dan, Eduardo, and Jessica will announce a winning word. Text the word to 777-000 to enter for the chance to win $3,000. And keep listening to all our ESPN Radio broadcasts of the baseball championship, because the prizes get bigger. In fact, the prize grows by $1,000 for each game. So if this series goes all the way to Game 7, the final prize will be $7,000. There's no purchase necessary, and you can go to ESPNradio.com for complete sweepstakes rules. One more time, listen to Game 3 tonight, hear the winning word, and text it to 777-000 for the chance to win $3,000. Message and data rates may apply. You're listening to Canty and Golic Jr., ESPN Radio and ESPN app.
This is ESPN Radio.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus, presented by Progressive Insurance. Amber Wilson filling in for Mike Golic Jr. today. All guests joined us via the Goodyear hotline, and we got to give a shout out to all the guests that came through. Josh Weinfuss, ESPN Cardinals reporter. Andre Snellings, ESPN senior writer, getting your hoops fixed on a Football Friday. Chris the Bear Felica, co-host of Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast. Marcus Spears, the Big Squagoo, ESPN NFL analyst. David Pollack, ESPN college football analyst. And Dan Shulman, baseball play-by-play on ESPN Radio, getting you ready for Games 3 of the World Series. If you missed any of that, go to the Canty and Golic Jr. podcast, download, rate, subscribe. But now, Amber, it's time to get to a little segment that we like to call 3 and Out. All right, so first up on 3 and Out today, we have Roger Goodell, who was paid nearly $128 million after navigating the league through labor peace media deals in the past 2 years. Now, the combination of salary bonuses and other benefits has been reported by the New York Times Thursday night, and Roger Goodell, apparently, because of this media rights deal that he's negotiated, he ends up being one of the highest paid figures in all of the National Football League. So, Amber, I'm not sure exactly how this all works out in terms of what the owners, weigh when they're trying to pay their commissioner, but it's clear that they're not paying him for his PR skills, because the way that he's handled things the last couple of weeks, not necessarily what you're looking for.
Maybe not when it comes to the entire investigation into the Washington football team and the refusal to make that investigation public. I think that's what you're referring to there. But I will say, overall, I think people underrate the PR component of Roger Goodell, because that dude's kind of like the fall guy, right? Like, he's the buffer. Like, everyone hates on Goodell all the time, and then all the heat is off the owners. And I mean, listen, we're still doing it here with Goodell and Dan Snyder, right? Where we're going after how he's handled things. Nevertheless, I digress. With Roger Goodell, really the reason he gets paid this, Chris, is 90% of it was bonuses, reportedly. And when you secure television deals that reportedly equate to over a $100 billion for the that's why you pay that man over $100 million. That's exactly why. And then you mentioned the labor agreement as well, and getting that done in a way that the owners, of course, were happy with. And you are talking about a Players Association, not the strongest in sports. The owners probably like that. So Roger Goodell making that money. But if he made me over $100 billion, I'd be willing to pay him $128 too.
Yeah, I mean, you're paying the guy $65 million a year to be a human pinata when it comes to the media. But as long as he negotiates those television rights deals and makes sure that he keeps the NFLPA union a little weaker when we compare him to the other sports unions, I guess that's the win for the NFL owners. Okay, next up on Three and Out, we have Mikey Williams, high school phenom, 17 years old, signs historic footwear and apparel deal with Puma. Mikey Williams landed a multi-year footwear deal with apparel endorsement with Puma, making him the first American high school basketball player to sign a sneaker deal with global footwear company. Now, Amber, I've seen the highlights from Mikey Williams. The kid is nice. Like, he is one of the next big things that we got coming up. It's going to be a while before we see him in the National Basketball Association, but apparently that doesn't matter to Puma. They feel like it's worth getting in and investing in this kid a lot earlier.
Yeah, the overreaction here is that we're going to see a bunch of these high schoolers now catapulted to fame and to riches while they're still in high school. And the truth is that this would not apply to many players. Of course, most players not good enough in high school. But then also, Mikey Williams has established himself as a social media presence. That was probably something that was also very attractive to Puma. We are going to see these NIL deals, though, for high school athletes moving forward. And it is interesting. And I think, Chris, the initial reaction could be, man, we are paying high school kids. Like, I don't know how much this deal is, but it's Puma. And so any amount of money in high school is nice, right? I'm guessing Puma's paying him more than Dunkin' Donuts was paying me when I was working for them in high school. Like, I just have a hunch. So I feel like Mikey Williams is probably doing better than most 17-year-olds at this point. But the truth of the matter is, every other high schooler can go earn money outside of sports. And I'm not mad at high schoolers, even if you're in high school, being able to capitalize on your social media fame and your athletic skills. It's time for that.
Yeah, Amber, I'm not surprised at this at all. I think this is the next evolution of name, image, and likeness. We've seen it evolve in the college level, but of course it's going to be a trickle-down effect to the prep level to amateur athletes. When people recognize greatness in these kids, they want to be the first ones in on it to maintain those relationships. We've seen sneaker companies do this in the past with being associated with high school basketball programs and trying to get in on these kids, establish those relationships early. I think this is just taking that to the next level. And so for the last part of Three and Out, Amber, we got to go back to the Halloween candy debate. I know we're both out on candy corn, but give me your A1, your number one trick-or-treat Halloween candy. You got to have it on Sunday.
You know, I like M&M's. I like Skittles. I like all of those. I think I would go Twix, though, and I feel bad because we failed to mention Twix earlier. I feel like you and I were mad disrespectful when we were talking about Snickers. What I am out on is our producer, Devin, saying Milky Way and Three Mouseketeers, which, by the way, are the same thing. The only thing missing is caramel. I'm out on those.
Come on, the fluffy chocolate? You don't like that?
I don't think anybody's going with the Three Mouseketeers. I will rock with you on the Milky Way, though. I can get down with that. Well, Amber, thank you for filling in for Mike Golic Jr. Coming up next, Game 3 of the World Series. This has been Candy and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.